And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the chilly Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. You think it's chilly today? Wait till tomorrow. Did you hear Tracy in that weather forecast? High tomorrow afternoon of 1. Wind chill 22 below. Holy moly, I don't even want to think about it. Hey, we have a good program for you today. We'll warm you up a little bit. We're going to be talking first about the upcoming symphony concert. The Butler County Symphony Orchestra will be in concert this Saturday night. A little bit later on the program, we'll be chatting with an old colleague here at WISR. Larry Berg will stop in to talk about a new project that he's got going entitled Your Family Heritage, Pass It On. But that's a little bit later. Let's first of all say hello to our guests here to talk about the symphony concert. Patty Stagno is the president of the Butler County Symphony Board. Patty, it is good to see you.
Thank you, Dave. It's great to be here.
We have sung together.
We have, absolutely.
I've sung with your husband Church as choirs. Well. In fact, I think all three of us have sung together at one point or another.
We're making music together.
Well, nice to have you here today.
Thank you, Dave.
And, gosh, it's good to say hello to an acquaintance of long-standing, Vincent J. Sanzotti, Jim Sanzotti. Jim, good to see you, my friend.
Thank you, David. Nice to be here.
We have a fascinating concert coming up this Saturday. The concert is entitled Nordic Winters. So I would suspect we're talking about Scandinavian composers here, Jim Sanzotti.
Yes, three very famous Scandinavian composers. A Norwegian, Edvard Grieg, a Finn, John Sibelius, and a Dane, Carl Nielsen.
Hmm. We'll talk about those in a moment, but just in case there are people listening in the car and they're just pulling into the supermarket or whatever and have to leave us, let's get to the details about the concert, Patty. It's Saturday night, right?
It is Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m. at the Butler Intermediate High School. Matthew Kramer will be doing a pre-concert chat at 6:30 ahead of things. And I always encourage people to attend those as well because he tells you what to listen for. He brings out points in the music and things that you might not necessarily know. And I think the better educated you are about the music, the more you can enjoy it and the more you appreciate it and that sort of thing. So the pre-concert chat starts at 6:30, concert at 7:30, free parking up there at the intermediate. And then we also shuttle people from the lower parking lot at the high school, too. So if it gets too crowded up at the intermediate, then jump on a bus and take a ride up to the intermediate, and they drop you right off at the door.
Tickets at the symphony office on the Diamond or still online, right?
Still online, that's right. They'll be on sale at the office, and that's right on the Diamond. And on the website as well, I said. Ticket prices are $25 for adults and only $8 for students. And that's any student. That's an elementary through college student, $8. So that's really important as well. We're running a sweetheart special. Oftentimes with this concert, it seems to fall near Valentine's Day. So we're running a special. And that would be two adult tickets for $35.
Take your sweetheart. Heart.
There you go.
Yeah, and save a little money
on a chilly night, and come out and hear some music to warm you up.
You don't have to tell her that you're saving all the money, or tell him.
That's right.
Just to keep it a secret.
Exactly.
Yeah. More information again online. I think it's ButlerSymphony.org.
It is the
website. We'll repeat that information, but I just wanted to get that out there in case some folks had to leave us before we finished. Well, let's talk a little bit, Jim Sanzotti, about these composers. I've heard of Sibelius. I've heard of Grieg. I never heard of this Nielsen guy.
Carl Nielsen.
Who's he?
Carl Nielsen is a Dane, a Danish composer. Very romantic at first. He began changing around the turn of the century to more or less romantic and more chromatic harmonies. and his early symphonies and early works, Masquerade being his opera that he's most famous for, and seven symphonies that he wrote, one of which we did here in Butler I guess it's been about 10 years ago now, the Third Symphony. I really enjoy Nielsen, and I'm an advocate of Nielsen, and so the reason why we play Nielsen, I think, is because of me.
Because I love it.
I just hound Matthew about it all the time. And my standmate, Richard Diefendorfer, is also a Nielsen advocate. So between the two of us, we push for Nielsen. And I didn't realize it, but we've played Nielsen on every concert in the last 5 years. So it hasn't been any of the symphonies, but it's been overtures.
Mm-hmm.
And the overture we're playing is entitled Pan and Syrinx. And that is a Greek legend of Syrinx, who is a nymph who wished to be changed into a reed. And Pan, being the god, complied and changed her into a reed. And he pursued her this entire time. And I'm not too much on Greek legends, but this one has been done by an awful lot of composers. Verdi, for one, has also worked on this particular theme, and many others. Wagner also. Anyhow, that's the overture, and it's a piece about 8 minutes long that we'll be playing first. And then the Greek Piano Concerto in A minor is a very famous piece. I think everyone in Butler will recognize it from the very opening, which is very recognizable. It's the only piano concerto we ever wrote. Greg wrote mostly miniatures, little pieces, piano pieces and little songs. But he, again, was a national figure. And Sibelius is probably the genius of the whole bunch, a symphonist, also seven symphonies. The second symphony we're doing, it's in D major. It is probably not his best, but it is certainly his most popular with audiences. It's performed an awful lot. It's very romantic, very dark, and very beautiful melodies, wonderful harmonic schemes. I think everyone in Butler will enjoy it.
I was looking at the dates of Jean Sibelius. He was born in 1865. He lived till 1957. That was a
yes.
long, rich life. Wow.
Right, very rich, because he didn't write much after 1924. So he was given a pension by the national government. And he lived out his life smoking cigars and drinking brandy.
Not a bad way to do it, huh?
And he didn't write much music after that, after 1924.
My information said that one of his best-known works is Finlandia.
Right. Jean Sibelius is part of the movement of nationalism that permeated the Nordic countries or the Scandinavian countries in the early 20th century, and he was part of the movement and used his music to display nationalism and to bring people together, and it worked very effectively. Finlandia is still a national treasure of Finland.
You mentioned that Edvard de Grieg, the Norwegian, was a romantic composer. Can you give us a quick definition of what that means? What's romantic classical music?
Romantic composers are part of the movement of romanticism in literature and romanticism in art. And the romantic composers are very melodic. The emphasis is on melodic lines and very intricate and emotional sounding harmonies. Lots of climaxes, you know, where music builds up to a big climax. Lots of unexpected modulations going from one key to another, which is always stirring for us humans. We like to have modulations. And the climax is particularly in Sibelius. That's what the symphony is all about. He takes little fragments of melody and just keeps building and building and building until you get to this enormous sound. And you figure you can't go anywhere from here, and he does. He goes someplace else.
I took a quick note. Believe me, when Jim Sanzotti's talking about classical music, I take notes.
Absolutely.
But you mentioned, I think it was Nielsen that you mentioned later in life, tended to do less romantic work and more chromatic work. Now, I can remember from my days long ago in high school orchestra, chromatic scale was when you went up the scale and played all the not just the major chords, but the flats and the sharps. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. For example, the Sibelius Symphony is in D major. That doesn't mean that the entire piece, four movements, are all in D major. That means that the center of the work is in D major, but he goes all over the place. I mean, he's in all different keys and goes back. But mostly what's going to happen is it's going to start in D major and it'll probably end in D major. I think it does end in D major. And the same is true of the A minor piano concerto. So when I say there are romantics and they are very melodic, there is a movement going on also in Germany particularly where you have atonal music. That means they avoid a tone center. In other words, they don't want to hear about D major or F minor or anything else. And the atonal or no tone center is the movement of also the 20th century, not as much today as it was in the 20th century, but these men, Greg, Sibelius, Carl Nielsen, pretty much ignored that movement. And they stuck pretty much with what had worked tried and true in the past. And, of course, a lot of composers today do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We think of them as being living in the past. Maybe they're very conservative. I don't know. But that is pretty much what they bring to the art.
Would atonal music tend to have more dissonance in it?
Yes. If a good example of that kind of music is Arnold Schoenberg, who lived about the same time, a little later. But his music is very atonal. If you'd sit and listen to it, it's not something that you would find relaxing, or it's not something that you would find and say, oh, this is beautiful. It would be more agitating, and it would be more angry, very angry. And comes out of World War I and World War II, but both movements were very significant. Schoenberg is one, Anton Webern is another. And we had a lot of Americans who wrote the same way. Roger Sessions, for example, people who did something for prepared piano, which means they get under the hood of the piano and put some papers in there, and you get different sounds.
Every time I talk to Jim Sanzotti and listen to him wax poetic about classical music, I regret the fact that I didn't have this guy for a teacher when I was in high school.
And there were so many that were very fortunate to have him as a teacher. My children as well. So, absolutely.
That's for sure. You also have, Patty Stagner, you have a guest pianist, who's going to be performing with the symphony this Saturday night. Who's that?
His name is Stephen Buse, and he comes to us from New York City. Stephen is an up-and-coming pianist, very gifted. I think you'll be able to hear more and more about him in the years to come as well. Young man. He is a Van Cliburn competition winner. We're pretty fortunate that Matthew Kramer has worked with many of our soloists in the past, and he is able to choose soloists that fit with our orchestra and fit with the community and with the things that we're trying to accomplish with our orchestra. So he's been very helpful in securing soloists in that respect. There are links on our website to There is a link on our website to Stephen's webpage also, his website as well. So it would, if you have a few extra minutes, go online, look that up, listen to the quality of music that he's playing and the talent and the ability that he has, and you'll be even more surprised on Saturday night when you hear him. But, you know, give yourself a little chance to listen to him ahead of time, and I think it'll make all the difference.
Now, will he be accompanying the orchestra on some of the works you discussed, or will he be doing something else? Do we know?
He'll be playing the Greg A minor piano concerto, which will be very familiar, I'm sure, to Butler audiences.
Is piano a standard instrument in an orchestra, or in particular with the Butler County Symphony?
Yes, we have a pianist. Most orchestral pieces written, particularly in the 20th century, have pianos in them someplace. It's not a standard part of the orchestra, but some keyboard is going to be required, either a clavinet or a harpsichord, or a piano, or in many cases an organ is used. So yes, keyboards are an integral part of the orchestra.
When you have a guest artist like this, pretty prestigious guest artist, Van Cliburn competition winner, do you wheel the grand piano out in front, or what do you do?
Yeah, the piano is the solo instrument, so he would be right out in front where everybody can see him.
Did you get a chance to rehearse with this guy?
He comes in on Friday. Friday night we will rehearse the piece, and then Saturday afternoon we'll have a run through. But the Grieg Piano Concerto is not a lot of orchestra; it's a lot of piano. So we get a chance to just sit around and listen. Mm-hmm. But we do have something to play, and we do have to fit it in. And it's been done so many times that. Everybody pretty much knows it. So it's not a piece that we have to rehearse over and over again.
Does the musical director and conductor of the Butler Symphony is Matthew Kramer. He still conducts whenever you're doing a piece like this with a guest pianist? Or
yes.
Does he let him
Yeah, he puts the
go?
Whole thing together. He's a very important cog in the performance. Very important. We wouldn't be able to get along without him.
I wonder sometimes when I see a great pianist at work, they don't tend to be looking anywhere, you know. That's like the furrowed brow, and they're really, I wonder how they can see the conductor out of the corner of their eye, I guess. Huh?
Well, it's not so much that he has to see the conductor, but the conductor has to see him.
Ah.
Because we are an accompaniment. He is the soloist. So pretty much whatever he does, we adjust to. Mm-hmm. So that's what we have to work out to make sure that his interpretation is very much the same, or at least known to Matthew, so that he can get the orchestra in gear.
You mentioned earlier Jim Sanzotti, your standmate. I assume that's a fellow clarinetist. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, the first clarinetist with you. I play second, and Richard plays first. So I consider us standmates. We've been playing together now for, I guess, about 8 or 10 years.
Strings and woodwinds would be the majority of instruments in
right.
the symphony, right? I mean, there are other instruments, of course.
Right, there are. It's strings, brass, and woodwinds and percussion.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the most important section is the woodwinds.
From a clarinetist, that would be correct. Well, there's clarinets, saxophones, or woodwinds, oboe.
We very seldom use saxophones, although we will in the next concert in March, there'll be saxophones involved.
It's more a jazz band type thing, right? Mm-hmm. Big band type thing. But oboe.
Oboe, flute, yeah. Mm-hmm. English horn,
bassoons.
Bassoon. And contrabassoons, bass clarinets. And
contrabassoon.
Clarinets. Yes.
What's that, the opposite of a bassoon?
No, that's a big bassoon. That's a really low bassoon.
Are flutes and piccolos considered woodwinds now?
Yes,
oh, they are?
And piccolos, yes.
They don't have reeds, though.
No reeds, but they are woodwinds. Horns don't have reeds either, and they are brass, but we like them in the woodwind section, too. The horns can go either way, brass or woodwind.
How big is the Butler County Symphony? How many players? Round number.
70?
I would say between 70 and 75.
It depends on each concert as well, because I know for the concert coming up in March, we need fewer musicians. So,
yeah,
you know,
I think
because
it's 43.
That we're doing then. But 70 to 75 perhaps for a full orchestra.
The one in March is interesting because of the, it's a Paul Whiteman orchestra. The movie music was done for a Paul Whiteman orchestra, so it is going to be much smaller.
I know that I haven't looked at that yet, but I know that Matthew Kramer, having talked with him on numerous occasions, he's big on doing movie music. He's done that several times, I know, a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago. He did some music that accompanied Alfred Hitchcock films. And I'm trying to remember the name of that composer,
Psycho.
And I can't think of
Psycho.
It.
Hitchcock
loved him. He worked with him on many, many films. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Matthew told me this is becoming more and more popular in symphonies around the country and around the world. Where
there's an orchestra in Los Angeles that's all they do.
Really?
That's it. They just do movies, and they commission music to be written for old movies to rejuvenate them.
Hmm.
And, when you go to one of their concerts, that's what you go there for, is to see the movie and hear the music.
And I think they are trying to bring in a different audience as well, so that if you play strictly classical music all the time, you're not going to appeal to as big of an audience as you would if you play some movie music, some lighter pieces.
Alfred Hitchcock.
Well,
don't miss this concert.
No, that's for sure. And that... It was surprising because that movie was so very tame to the, 21st century audiences now, as opposed to when it, when it was first viewed and it first came out and so forth. But even the John Williams pieces and the Disney things that we do, and it's our goal to appeal to a much broader audience and to bring the youth to the symphony, and to bring young adults and middle-aged adults, just have something that throughout the course of the season will appeal to everybody and to large variety.
John Williams, Henry Mancini, but moviegoers might be surprised to know that many, many, many films use music from the classical composers from back
absolutely.
In the 1800s. You may not recognize it, but it's used a lot in film.
Yes, and I think of some of the opera pieces that are that have been used in movies as well. Opera pieces used in like Moonstruck, or
Clockwork Orange.
There you go, exactly. So and sometimes people will relate to that movie. They'll say, "Oh, I know that music from such and such." Well, that's actually a Bach piece, or that's a something by a classical composer. So, it's about making connections. And I think when you make that connection with your audience and the music that you play, then that's where you want to be.
You mentioned ticket prices for the Butler Symphony concerts. It's $25 for adults, although there's the Sweetheart Special for this particular concert coming up this Saturday night. $8 per student. Patty Stagnaw, how the heck do you... I think it's wonderful that you're able to make it so affordable for young people to attend, or for older folks to take young people to a concert like
this.
I don't know how you do it. $8, that's amazing.
And that's actually an increase from a couple of years ago, too. So, it's not easy to run the Symphony Association with ticket prices that are that reasonable. And that's why, of course, we're always looking for donors and sponsors to help defray the costs, the operating costs that we have with the orchestra. It takes approximately about $30,000 to put on a show.
Wow.
At a concert.
You mean one concert?
One concert, right.
Holy moly. Wow.
And sometimes maybe 25, sometimes 35, but we'll say 30 to kind of, cut the difference there in the middle. And so, our donors and our patrons are very, very important to us. Although ticket prices only cover about a third of that cost. So that's why, we're... we're always doing a fundraiser of some sort, or looking for corporations and patrons who are willing to invest in the Butler County Symphony, because it is a very good investment, that's for sure.
Indeed. We're talking about the Butler County Symphony Orchestra's concert coming up this Saturday. This Saturday is February 2nd, believe it or not.
Groundhog Day.
I'm always happy to see January in the rearview mirror. I know it's still going to be cold in February, but it just feels better once you can get rid of January. The concert is entitled Nordic Winters, and as Jim Sensati has explained, featuring works by Nordic, I guess Scandinavian, certainly for Norway and Finland. I don't know whether Denmark is considered Scandinavian. Nordic is a good description. Yeah.
General term, sure.
Yeah, Nordic winters. The symphony will have two more concerts after this, am I correct?
We will, that's right. Mm-hmm. We have a concert coming up on Saturday, March 2nd, and that's when the silent film Safety Last will be shown, and then the orchestra accompanies the silent film.
While you're listening to the live music.
Exactly, yeah. And mm-hmm. that's a treat also, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then we'll end the season on a Sunday, April 14th at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, a little bit of a switch for us. There was some scheduling problems there, so we were able to switch to a Sunday afternoon, and that concert is entitled Fire and Water. It features a baritone soloist, Timothy Lefevre, who has sung with the orchestra before, and we're glad to welcome him back again. He's got some local ties in the Butler area, some family from this area also, so it's always nice for Tim to come back and play to sing. Well, your voice is an instrument, yeah. So there you go. Yeah. To sing for some local family and friends and so forth. Tim is actually a former student of mine.
Ah.
Many, many years ago down in Beaver County, yes. So, so we go way back. And his mother was a music teacher with whom I taught as well. So, we have a little bit of history going back, too. But he's a fabulous soloist, and I think everyone will appreciate that. That's also where we're going to feature our 40th concerto competition winner. And we staged that competition at Slippery Rock University last Sunday, and we do have a fabulous vocalist. I can't give all the details mm-hmm. about that right now, because that's coming out today or tomorrow on our website and on the Facebook page as well. But she will be accompanying, or she will be singing with the orchestra that day for that Sunday afternoon concert, as well as we have an educational outreach program that we call Young Musicians of Note. And this is where the Butler County music teachers nominate their students who have great potential, who are very talented and so forth. We recognize them at the concert as well. So that'll be a full afternoon. And we'll end the season, this being our 70th season, we'll end that concert and that afternoon with a nice reception as well. So we kind of celebrate the youth being recognized and the talents of our orchestra, and also the history of the organization.
Tickets for this Saturday's symphony concert available at the Symphony Office, which is on the Diamond in downtown Butler, or online at butlersymphony.org. Yes. How nice to have the two of you here today.
It's nice to be here, Dave.
Enjoyed the chat. Nice to talk with you. Patty Stagnow is president of the Butler Symphony Board, and Vincent Jim Sensati, a longtime member of the Symphony and a much-loved former teacher in the Butler School District. More to come on It's Your Turn here on WISR this chilly Tuesday. Stick around. We'll be back right after these words.
For more than 130 years, the name Concordia has meant quality care. Today, Concordia Visiting Nurses has provided high-quality, skilled nursing and a variety of therapy services to people in and around our community. Concordia Visiting Nurses is here to foster your recovery right in your own home. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
When you want a home-cooked meal at a reasonable price, go to Michael's Restaurant. Featuring Italian and American cuisine, daily lunch and dinner specials, prime rib on Fridays and Saturdays, and homemade desserts. Open 7 days a week from 7 to 9, Michael's Restaurant on 422 near the Butler Fairgrounds.
In 2019, Tri-River celebrates 25 years as your Butler neighbor, providing exceptional musculoskeletal care in the community.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tom Mazzanegro, known by many as Dr. Muzzy, and I'm an orthopedic hip and knee surgeon. Patients do best when they are engaged with the process, educated, and invested in their own well-being. At Tri-Rivers, the patient is at the center of everything we do.
To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
It's a battle for first place on Tuesday night, and WISR will be there. Hi, everyone. This is Scott Briggs inviting you to join me as the first place Knock Knights host second place Highlands. It should be a good one. And we'll be on the air at 7:15 with a pregame show. 7:30 is our tip-off from Saxonburg. Knock basketball this season presented to you in part by the John W. Thrower Cement Corporation of Saxonburg, Troy Allen Chevrolet in Slippery Rock and Troy Allen Buick in Katanning, the law firm of Dillon, McCandless, King, Coulter & Graham, Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, the Butler Health System's Faster Care, Butler County District Attorney Rich Goldinger, and Heffron Tillotson's Mike McKee. It's Knock and Highlands in a big battle this Tuesday night right here on WISR, WISR680.com, and the Trib Live High School Sports Network.
Welcome back, good friends. It's the Tuesday edition. It's your turn, and our next guest is an acquaintance and friend of long standing. We welcome Larry Burrig here to our WISR studios. Larry, it's good to see you.
Dave, it's good to see you, and it's interesting for me to be on this side of the microphone.
That's right. Larry Burrig was a host of this program for many, many years, but gosh, it's been many years since you left us.
Do you know what? This week, it'll be 18 years after my last broadcast here.
I know, because it's been 18 years since I've been doing this program.
That's right. And you're still here, and I'm not.
We want to talk a little bit about Larry Burrig's broadcasting career. It's been a great ride. But he also has a new project coming up, and we want to talk about that, too.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. The new project is called Your Family History.
Your Family History, Pass It On.
What's that all about, Larry?
Well, about 4 years ago, one of my grandchildren said, "You've had such an interesting career and such an interesting life. Why don't you write a book?" And I said, "Well, I can't write a book. How can I do that?" So I started typing out the story of my life as much as I could remember. Ended up to be 27 pages. But while I was doing that, I thought I was so mad at myself because I never talked with my grandparents about their lives. I never talked as much as I should have with my own parents. And I started to realize after typing out my history that there are a lot of people that are going to lose that chain with their next heirs and their grandchildren and their children and beyond that. And so I decided to start a new project where I'll be going to people's homes with a small video camera. And because questioning is what I do, that's what I've done all these years, to prompt them to tell the story of their lives in great detail, as much as they want to talk about, so they can pass it on to their children and their grandchildren and beyond, so that that very important personal part of their personal history will not be lost.
And then will you provide people with a video disc or something like that?
Well, this is not going to be for public consumption. It's not going to be broadcast. There'll be no copies made except the ones that I give to the family. It'll be on either a DVD or a flash drive, and they can then use that the way they wish and pass it on to as many in their family as they want.
When are you going to start this project?
Well, I'm doing the first one Thursday of this week and hoping that lots of people will show some interest. So far, everywhere I've gone, people have been very interested in doing this, and I'm just hoping that the people will contact me.
How do they do that? Do they do that online, or what do they do?
Well, they can get to my website, which is LarryRadio@ZoomInternet.net. We'll the reason
that,
I use
Larry. We'll give that again a couple of times because that's a long one.
LarryRadio@zoominternet.net. Mm-hmm. And the reason I use Larry Radio, I tried to get Larry Berg, but it was taken.
Some interloper, huh?
There are three Larry Bergs in Pittsburgh, I found out.
I saw that somebody, this is a little bit parenthetical, but somebody purchased websites of potential presidential candidates 2 years down the road.
I heard that.
They purchased them just so that they can't use them. They'll already be gone whenever they try to set up websites.
Dave, what was interesting, when I was broadcasting at KDKA for 11 years, one day I got a call and somebody said, "I don't understand something, Larry Berg. You're my dentist." And I said, "No, I'm not. I'm a different Larry Berg, but there are three Larry Bergs in Pittsburgh.
One of the other ones." Huh?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, we'll give that website again. Let's talk a little bit about your career. Many of our listeners will remember you on our airways for many, many years. Your broadcasting career goes back decades, Larry.
70 years.
70 years. Wow.
When I was in college at New York University, a fellow that I was, who was my classmate, said, "Are you interested in a part-time job?" And, well, of course. And he worked for a small private radio school, and they catered mostly to veterans coming back from World War II. This was 1947.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the job, and I was carrying tape recorders and sitting on classes with some of the top New York broadcasters. And somebody who was working in that radio school said, "Are you interested in being on the radio?" And I, well, of course, but how can I be? I don't have any experience. He says, "There's a small FM station in downtown New York, and in those days there were very few FM sets, very few FM listeners. This is 1947.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking for announcers to work for nothing. Now they call them interns." So I went down there in spring of 1948 and auditioned, and I got the job. And I can't understand. I didn't know anything. I had no experience. I hadn't taken but a few classes at NYU. And I was there for 2.5 years and got terrific experience on the air, interviewing people and disc jockey program, a Sunday classical music program. And it just gave me a real boost.
Mm-hmm. And then you moved on to, I know when you were with us, you told me once that one of your great interviews was Elvis Presley, is that right? You interviewed Elvis?
That was in 1956. I was program director and disc jockey at a station in New Orleans, WNOE. And we had heard a rumor that Elvis was engaged to a girl in Biloxi, Mississippi. Now, we were on a 50,000-watt station that covered the entire Gulf Coast. So I called her. I got her phone number through information or somehow. This was before that stuff was available on the computer. And I interviewed her about 10 o'clock in the morning and promoted all day that we'd be having this interview on the air to find out if Elvis Presley was really engaged. At 4 o'clock that afternoon, he walked into our studios. They had been listening in the car.
Mm.
He heard about this. Our studios were at the St. Charles Hotel, and he came in and said, "I want to clear this up because it's not good for my career at this stage to indicate that I'm engaged." And we sat and talked for about a half hour and told me the story of his life and insisted that he wasn't engaged.
Was he wearing a white jumpsuit?
No, he was wearing regular clothes. What's interesting is every book that was written about Elvis Presley indicates that interview and that episode, but they never mentioned my name.
Mm.
And then a couple of months later, because I was the Elvis guy in the city and the town went crazy, it was on the front page of the paper, they asked me to MC his first concert series in New Orleans, which I did. And that's when I gave him the key to the city and have some pictures of it. And it was just one of the highlights of my career.
No, this would have been before he went into the service, is that right?
Well, no, that was after.
After he went into the service?
Let me give you a chronology, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
In college, I was working at that FM radio station, and also we got a half hour on another FM station where we got a live band, a singing group, and a couple of a chorus of singers. And I wrote and announced that program. It was a 13-week program, so I had that experience, too. Then also, they were looking for an announcer to do a program all for no money on WNYC, which was the New York City radio station. It was called a Junior Journal. It was a kid's program, 10-minute program, and I was Mr. Announcer. But all of this led to the fact that I had a really good resume of experience when I graduated from college, and very few others did all this free work that I did. And consequently, I got a job in Sayre, Pennsylvania, my first full-time job. Then I was drafted into the Army for a couple of years, where I was in Armed Forces Radio Service, so I was being paid again for doing what I was trained to do for a couple of years. And when I got out, I went to Elmira, New York, where I was on a TV station. And then, I'm not sure you want to hear this story, but one of the things I did on the TV station, I was a weatherman. And I knew nothing about the weather, but the boss said, "You are now going to be a weatherman. Here's a book to read." I said, "When's the first weather forecast?" He says, "Tomorrow night." A few months later, Hurricane Hazel came through Elmira, New York, and he said, "Get on the air and give us a long broadcast about the course of the hurricane and the effect it might have in Elmira." So I got up, and with a little information, there was no weather station in Elmira. We had to rely upon Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And I told them, "Folks, don't worry, because it seems to be clearing up." At that moment, the tower of the television station blew down. And I was the last person to have ever been on that television station. So I was out of a job, and this is a long story, Dave. I'm sorry.
I'm laughing because when you said, "Don't worry, it looks like it's clearing up," and then the tower came crashing down.
And up until 10 years ago, that was the last time I was ever on television. But I went back home to live with my parents in New York for a month or so before I got a job. And there was a letter waiting for me from the fella that I had gotten my job for in Sayre, Pennsylvania, when I got drafted. He had since become program director of the number one radio station in Dallas, and he hired me to become a member of that staff. And that led to probably the biggest beginning of my real major market career.
We'll talk more with our guest, Larry Burrig, here on It's Your Turn on WISR, the Chilly Tuesday edition. We will be back right after these words.
Need to get out of town? Check into Butler Motor Tours. They can get you out of town in style and in comfort on their big luxury cruise buses. Have you checked out their website lately? So many exciting trips coming up. Check out butlerbus.com and find out where they're taking you next. They have trips all over the country. They'll even help you set sail to maybe the Caribbean. Casino trips, historic landmarks, all across the country. No driving, no handling luggage, entertainment, and most meals. All can be put together with no worries, all in an inclusive price. Call Butler Motor Tours today for more information. Or again, go to their website, butlerbus.com, and check out all of the exciting trips. They especially take care of you around the holidays. Seriously, no better way to travel than Butler Motor Tours.
Welcome back, good friends. We're chatting with an old friend. Larry Burrig is with us here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Larry is starting a new project, Your Family History, Pass It On. And we're talking about that. Also talking about his long and distinguished career in broadcasting, which covers many, many cities over the decades. You've mentioned New York, Elmira, New Orleans, Dallas. You were in other places too, weren't you?
Well, St. Louis and Tulsa. What happens in broadcasting, if you're ambitious, and I always have been, is you try to continue to improve yourself and improve your position. And so when I went to Dallas, this was owned by Gordon McLendon, the person who invented Top 40 radio, which at that time was the new brand of radio. And that led to being sent by him to New Orleans to be program director, then hired away by another firm that had two stations, Des Moines and Tulsa, where they needed a program director with experience in Top 40 radio. And one thing led to another, and I ended up in Baltimore, which was the number one station after I got there. And then it was a great experience, and it was one of my big successes in broadcasting. And then I decided that I really wanted to get away from corporate broadcasting because it was a real hassle, lots of pressure, and didn't want to move anymore. So we decided maybe we could buy a small radio station in a small town, and we found out that WBUT in a place called Butler, Pennsylvania, was in financial difficulty, and we thought maybe we could afford to scrape some things together and buy it, which was what we did in 1964, and that's what brought us to Butler.
You'd never been to Butler before?
Never been here, never heard of it before. And from the very beginning, people were really good to us. John Ciprian, who used to own Miller Shoe Store, his children still run it. Somehow or other took a liking to me and asked me to join Rotary. So I got involved with a Rotary Club, and at that time, all the movers and shakers in the business community were members of Rotary. Then he got to me involved with the board of directors of then the Easter Seal Society, which is now Life Steps. And one thing led to another where the community started accepting me as a newcomer, and that led to the increase in commercials on the radio station, increased in business, increased in becoming involved with the community, and that's what builds a radio station, as you know.
You became involved with the Chamber of Commerce as well.
I became involved with them after the first couple of years and eventually became president and realized how important the Chamber of Commerce was to the business community, and that led again to associations with people which helped build the radio station.
We talked about your getting a chance to interview Elvis Presley and MC one of his concert. Any other really, really big names that you were able to interview down through the decades?
Well, I think probably one of the biggest besides Elvis was Paul McCartney.
Who's
of
that?
The Beatles.
Who? Oh, Paul McCartney. Never heard of him. Well, how the heck did you ever get to interview him?
Well, when I was in Baltimore, we were the top radio station, and I was the top-rated disc jockey. And they, when the Beatles were coming to America for the first time, they landed in New York, and then they immediately went to Washington, D.C., for their first public concert in America at the Washington Coliseum. Capitol Records called me and asked me to co-MC that concert with the number one disc jockey in Baltimore, in Washington. We were kind of like sister cities in a sense.
Very close, yeah.
And I couldn't get there. There was an ice storm that night, and I couldn't go. I contacted Capitol, and I said, look, can you arrange some way for me to interview them somehow? Well, the next day, because of the ice storm, they came by private railroad car from Washington, stopped in Baltimore for just about 5 minutes for whatever the reason. So I made arrangements to get on the railroad car. And when I walked in, I really didn't know who was who because they were so new. I never saw pictures of them but maybe one album cover. And I finally realized that was Paul McCartney sitting in the middle of the railroad car in a chair. The rest of them were all standing. So I interviewed Paul McCartney. And at that time, Ringo Starr was taking pictures of everything. And he's known to have taken thousands and thousands of pictures wherever they went. So I tried all these years to get a copy of that picture, but never could. So that was Paul McCartney with just maybe 2 or 3 or 4 minutes.
Was he congenial?
He was wonderful. Now, remember, this was the first time they were in this country. And I remember one of the first questions I asked was, did you really expect this kind of a enthusiastic response? Because, again, the first time in America, even though their records were really selling. And he said, we didn't know what to expect.
Well, they were just kids at the time, too, don't forget.
Yeah, they were probably 21, 22.
I would say right around there, yeah.
And they were all there, and you know this, Dave. You've talked to famous people, and sometimes you don't put it in perspective till years later. You don't realize how really important that was. Mm-hmm. It was the same with Elvis Presley, the same thing with Paul McCartney.
Yeah, don't realize how famous they're going to be down the road. You didn't get a chance to talk with any of the other Beatles? They were just milling around in the...
Well, I didn't have time because the train was only there for a few minutes.
Oh, I misunderstood. I thought you stayed on the train as
on. No, no, not at all. I had to get right off.
Yeah, their private train, huh?
Oh, not the whole train, just the private car on the train.
The Beatles. Well, listen, most recently people have seen you on Armstrong Cable Television, a program called Faces and Places. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, let me give this a perspective, Dave, if we have time. I retired from WBUT and WISR 18 years ago this month, this
mm-hmm.
week.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I retired after 11 years at KDKA. And just last month, I retired from 10 years of Faces and Places on Armstrong. But it's interesting how that came about. One day, there was a special event at the Maradon Museum, and I was on the board of directors from the very beginning there. And they asked me to MC a program called a doll exchange. And now that's an old Oriental custom where a city in Japan exchanges dolls with a city someplace else in the world. They're like sister cities. And Butler became the sister city of this city, wherever it was in Japan. And the president of Westinghouse Broadcasting in Cranberry Township was Japanese. So we got him to be the emissary to get the doll from the city in Japan, bring it to the Maradon Museum, and we'd do the doll exchange there with a special ceremony. So I emceed that. And after that ceremony, Matt Lutz, the producer, one of the producers at Armstrong, came to me and said, the fellow who was supposed to be doing interviews for this program could not make it today. Would you mind interviewing the president of Westinghouse and a few other people at the Maradon Museum, because we want to get this on tape? So I did. And a couple of days later, Matt called me and said, would you consider being the host of Faces and Places? So that's how that was my audition. And that's how that happened. I did that for 10 years and decided that it's time to give it up, because I don't want people to say, he used to be pretty good, and now he's no longer that good. Maybe he should have retired sooner. I didn't want that to happen. So I jumped the gun and retired at the end of December.
That happens sometimes to football players.
Yes,
or baseball players.
Yes, it does.
You know, they stick around for just one more year. Franco Harris would be a good example.
Well, and there's a quarterback floating around that people are talking about.
That's possible, too. Hey, a final break. We'll be back and chat for a couple of more minutes with Larry Berg here on It's Your Turn on WISR for a Tuesday. We'll be back right after this.
So I'm in my mid-40s, and I thought it might be time to put the basketball away for good after experiencing back and muscle pain on many occasions. But I decided not to give up so easily. My wife recommended Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center. No need to step away from your favorite physical activities when Applewood is here to help you enjoy those activities. Applewood can help you get back on the court or into your other favorite activities. Applewood Chiropractic, Thorn Apple Drive, Butler. Call 724-283-0518.
Did you buy a car, truck, or SUV last year thinking you were going to get 0% or some other low-rate finance offer and then drove off the lot with a much higher rate? Don't worry. Armco Credit Union has the solution. Refinance with us and get a 60-month loan on a 2016 or newer vehicle for just 2.24% APR. We've got low rates on older models, too. It's never been easier to join, so call any of our four branch locations today or visit us at armcocu.com for membership and rate information. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federal. Insured by NCUA.
Welcome back. We have a few more minutes left to chat with our guest, Larry Berg. He mentioned that he retired just recently from doing the Faces and Places program on Armstrong. Is that last one, that last show, still up?
Well, for the last couple of years, they've been talking about some of the managers from Armstrong said, we should interview you because you had an interesting experience, background. And so we decided to put it off until my last broadcast, which would probably be more appropriate. So we recorded that a few weeks ago, and it was on the air last week. It's going to be on this week and on the air next week as well, on two or three times a day for the next couple of weeks. And it's one of the few times, besides today, Dave, that I would have been interviewed on the radio or TV.
You're on the other side of the table here.
That's right.
Well, let's talk again about your new venture, your family history, Pass It On. You talked about how you got the idea for this because you were regretting the fact that you hadn't talked with some of your ancestors who had passed on. This came up in my family not too long ago. We were trying to find out the maiden name of a great-grandmother, and nobody knew, and there was nobody to ask.
See, that's the shame of it all, Dave. And this is what I'm learning from so many people I've talked to about this. Everybody says, well, everybody knows everything, or somebody else can tell them later on. The oldest people in the family are the ones that I'd like to talk to, those in their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, because they're the ones that can go farther back in their past. They can talk about not only their parents, but their grandparents, and their grandparents will be their children's great-grandparents. And you probably can't go back beyond that, but you want to, before they all pass away, the older people in the family pass away, somebody has to tell that story. So I hope to be going into people's homes, as I will be this Thursday with someone, videotaping an interview. I won't be on camera. They will be. It'll be a personal interview that nobody else will hear except them, unless they want to pass it on. And I'll be able to prompt them, because I'm a questioner by trade, prompt them to bring out the most in their family that they want to. I'll be asking no questions that will embarrass them. I'll find out beforehand what they don't want to talk about, because many families have skeletons in their closets.
Really?
and make sure that they talk about whatever they want to talk about concerning their family, their parents, their grandparents, as far back as they can go. And I believe their children and their grandchildren will cherish this in years to come. It'll be a family treasure, Dave.
And how can people who might be interested in this get a hold of you or contact you?
Well, my website is LarryRadio@ZoomInternet.net. LarryRadio@ZoomInternet.net. Just leave your name and telephone number, and I'll call you back, and we'll talk about it and make sure you understand what it's all about, what the cost will be, and we'll take it from there.
Mm-hmm. And you probably plan to do this for the next, what, 15, 20 years, something like that?
You're restricting me, Dave.
A long career in broadcasting. 70 years, you said.
70 years, and this is the first year that I've not been in broadcasting except for this broadcast.
Wow. Well, it's nice to see you. Nice to talk to you.
Good
again,
to see you, right? Dave. Thank you. And thanks for carrying on the traditions here at WISR.
My pleasure. Yeah, my honor. Hey, coming up on tomorrow's program, he's still the fairly new director of the A.B. Abraham VA Medical Center here in Butler, VA Healthcare. John LaSalle will be with us. And we're also going to be talking with Pete Albert, who heads up the suicide prevention program at the VA here in Butler. So very interesting program. Should be lots to talk about there. And don't forget, day after tomorrow, on the Thursday edition, Bill Hillgrove will be with us, the longtime play-by-play announcer for, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Pitt Panthers, Pitt Panther basketball. And he's a Western Pennsylvania guy, too. He's a Pittsburgh guy. He's a legend. And he just received a nationwide award. It was just announced a week or so ago. So we'll be talking about that with Bill Hillgrove. And, well, I think we'll query him a bit about all the turmoil on the Steelers, too, with Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell and all that. That's Thursday here on It's Your Turn. Enjoy the rest of your day. Program note, we have Knock High School basketball tonight here on WISR. The Knock boys have a tremendous winning streak going. They won 12 in a row. They lost last week. Somebody told me they won. I was busy at the wine festival and I didn't get to hear it, and somebody told me they won that. Well, they'll start a new winning streak tonight as they host Highlands at the Saxonburg Gym. Scott Briggs will bring you the live play-by-play of that game tonight, airtime 7:15 here on WISR. Stay warm. We'll see you tomorrow, 12:30.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
My tears are falling, 'cause you've taken her away. And though it really hurts me so, there's something that I've gotta say. Take good care of my baby. Please don't ever make her blue. Just tell her that you love her. Make sure you're thinking